From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Jason Schwartzman was a musician before he was an actor. Now he's teamed up with old friend Woody Jackson to compose a movie score. Plus, Keanu Reeves makes a documentary about a revolution in the movie business. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, we've talked about the studios facing big challenges in today's world before, and now the numbers are in for the summer, and they, in terms of ticket sales, I mean, and they are not good.
No, this is a period of time where 40% of all tickets are sold. So the fact that revenues were down 3% is one thing. The fact that actual tickets sold was off 4%, the lowest level in 19 years, which incidentally is when record keeping started, is, I think, much more worrisome. The idea of movie going as a habit seems to be fading.
Yeah, we have seen a couple of really big hits, The Avengers and Dark Knight Rises and Spider-Man. The rebooted Spider-Man from Sony did well. But otherwise, things were pretty grim. And there are a couple of mitigating factors that studio executives talk about, one of which is the tragedy in Colorado and the fact that people may have been dissuaded from going to the theaters for a while. And the other is the Olympics, which were, you know, a huge ratings success, as we've talked about, for NBC this summer. But beyond that, I think the fact is we've been in a sort of a summer of have and have-nots in the studios, and the have-nots have gotten hit pretty hard.
Definitely. There are a ton of movies like Dark Shadows and Battleship, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, that failed to do really any business at all. And I think if you talk to enough studio executives, they say it's not just that people go to the theater on Friday and start tweeting how much they hate a movie. They're just not even in the habit of showing up that Friday night. So you can't even get bad word of mouth going. People are choosing to do different things rather than going to see the movies. And I think that's a very troubling sign, not just for the rest of the year, but for the years that lie ahead.
But we are heading into a time of the year when there are movies for people who aren't necessarily interested in comic book heroes. And I know you've been at Telluride and Toronto is underway. So what's your take on the festival scene this year and movies that will be coming to us hoping to win some awards?
Telluride has had a great reputation in recent years of having the North American or world premieres of movies like The King's Speech, The Artist, Slumdog Millionaire, and I'm not sure there was a huge awards movie that came out of this year's festival outside of Argo, which is Ben Affleck's telling of the rescue of six American hostages hiding in the Canadian embassy during the Iranian hostage crisis in 1979. That was a movie that came out of the festival with great momentum. It's a movie that critics and audiences will like. And now we have the Toronto International Film Festival, which is going to showcase a ton of very important movies for not just the award season, but for the general public going forward.
Now, one of those movies has had a lot of buzz, The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson, whose last film was There Will Be Blood. And I think that film has already been seen by a few people, and there's just a lot of awards crackle around that picture.
No, it played at the Venice Film Festival before it headed to Toronto. This is the movie that's technically not about Scientology, but having seen it, it really is about Scientology. It has two great performances at its center, Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman. And The Master is really not the only movie with a lot of awards credibility coming out of Toronto. There is Cloud Atlas, which is the movie from the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer. There's Silver Linings Playbook, the new movie from David O. Russell. Frances Ha, which is Noah Baumbach's new movie that played in Telluride. So there's a lot of movies that I think we'll be talking about in the next couple of weeks that are going to come out of these festivals if their filmmakers have pulled off the job with a lot of really good enthusiasm.
Speaking of Scientology and The Master, the movie may or may not be about Scientology, but there has been a big new outburst of news about Scientology thanks to an article in Vanity Fair. Vanity Fair has written about the auditions that were held of actresses to be Tom Cruise's wife in the wake of his split from Nicole Kidman. I mean, this extraordinary search that at one point they were looking at people like Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Garner. And they early on went in 2004, according to this article, tried an actress named Nazanin Boniadi, an Iranian-born British-raised actress, and she apparently went through a terrific ordeal where they kind of put her through a makeover and then decided she wasn't quite up to scratch for Tom Cruise and dropped her and penalized her for talking about it, confiding in somebody about this experience. But from our point of view, John, this is not a story that you want if you're trying to market a Tom Cruise movie, as Paramount will do shortly. In fact, this story is so toxic, I would say, that it makes that split from Katie Holmes just like a little drop in the bucket compared to this sort of tsunami of this incredibly intimate, detailed story.
There are very few actors whose personal lives have eclipsed their private lives. And certainly this has happened to Tom Cruise. I think it's happened to Mel Gibson. And yes, if you are Paramount Pictures and you have Jack Reacher, a multi-million dollar drama about a former homicide investigator and his crime series that could be a potential franchise, what you really want is a nice puffy story in Entertainment Weekly about how great the movie is. And instead, you have the story that delves into Tom Cruise's personal life. And I think it's really very likely that this story will be the conversation around the movie, not the movie itself.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Our producer, Darby Maloney, will be at the Toronto Film Festival next week. Follow her on Twitter at DarbyKCRW for updates. Coming up later in the show, Keanu Reeves makes a documentary about film. But first, Jason Schwartzman loves making music. The small indie feature Goats is a coming-of-age tale about a teenager surrounded by adults who aren't especially grown up. Graham Phillips plays the teen, and he co-stars with David Duchovny and Vera Farmiga.
Ah, I've had these miserable headaches in September. Starts in my heart, goes around my head, back down in my heart.
Jason Schwartzman doesn't appear in Goats, but he did write the score, along with his friend, musician Woody Jackson. Schwartzman was a musician before he started acting, and he still makes music. Jackson, his old friend, had scored video games and worked as a session musician on many movies, including Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's 12 and 13. But Goats is their first feature film credit as composers. Schwartzman is a member of a large entertainment family. His uncle is Francis Ford Coppola. His cousins are Nicolas Cage and Sofia Coppola. Jason's mom is Talia Shire. She's also the actress best known as Adrian in the Rocky films. Yet another member of the family is Goats director Christopher Neal. He's also Schwartzman's cousin, and when he needed a score for his first feature film, Jason got the call.
I knew he'd been making this movie, Goats. You know, he'd been making it for almost 10 years, to not actually shooting it for 10 years, but, you know, developing
help.
It. Mm-hmm. And he called and, you know, he said, I was thinking about it, and I was wondering if maybe, you know, maybe you're, you know, you'd like to contribute music for it and try to write something. And I said, well, I would love to, but can I see the movie? And, you know, I don't know if I can do the job. And so he sent over this movie, and I watched it, and immediately I thought to myself, I can do this if I can do it with Woody. It just felt like we could do this. We could easily collaborate on this together and make good music for it, hopefully.
Are you and Christopher Neal like close cousins or just like kind of know each other?
No, very close.
So it wasn't like...
Yeah, he has my cell phone number.
He has?
Yeah, he has it.
Well, that's
clearly
the criterion.
Yeah. No, he's very... I grew up with him.
So were you all up for this, Woody?
Yeah, I'm... being a film composer is a really tough job, getting the job and getting a fun job. And so I kind of base my whole life on trying to do fun things and things I want to do. And so it's been a compromise on certain other levels. So when Jason,
you mean with other projects where it's not that fun, or what do we
say?
No.
More of like, I will turn things down if I don't want to do it.
Hippie. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Come on.
Well, it's, you know, peace, it's the bro. Southern California way. You know, like,
right.
I only want to be happy all the time. So when Jason asked me, I was, of course.
Now, Woody, you've scored a lot of video games.
I have worked on two big games, yeah. Three, actually, yeah.
Three.
But for, like, this movie, it's, like, I think 45 minutes worth of music. He had to do, for, like, these games, you know, 17 hours of music.
Not that many. Six.
Okay, 6 hours. But but three or four of those games, like, that's, like, doing 20 movies in one game. The amount, the volume of music you have to create, it's staggering.
So but, what's more fun, video games or movie?
This
was your first movie, right?
This is my first real movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Music is to break into trying to score movies. It is a very like tight community of people. And
well, people, if you've done something big, even if you don't like it, if it's big, they can see that you finished something. And so it's an ongoing thing. And like, let's use this guy because he's...
But this is something we want to do more of. You know, it was so much fun, and it's you know, if you love movies and music, to be able to do the music for a movie, it's like the ultimate combination, because you are helping the movie and like, you know, doing something in service of this visual story and characters and stuff. But you're also doing, you know, what you love to do, which is hold instruments and play them.
So if you're, can you see a world where you go to Wes Anderson and say, "Dude, I could totally score this next movie."
Well, I wouldn't call him dude.
Okay.
I just say...
I wouldn't either.
No, I just
was trying to visualize a relationship.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't suggest it. He knows where I live.
So here's goats. You might want to listen to it. You don't have to watch it. Just listen to it.
Oops, I left something at your house. You can listen to it. I left a CD in your house.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, you have to. It's all about leaping.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with actor and composer Jason Schwartzman and his longtime friend, musician Woody Jackson. The two collaborated on the score for the new movie, Goats. Schwartzman got his start as an actor by chance when he was cast in the Wes Anderson movie, Rushmore. Before that, he was a drummer in the band Phantom Planet. He grew up in a show business family. His uncle is Francis Ford Coppola, and his mother is actress Talia Shire. We asked Schwartzman how his mother felt about his initial goal of being a musician.
My mom's father was a composer, and music was always around her life, and I think she was really excited that I showed an interest in music at a young age, and so she was all for it, but she wasn't thrilled about the idea of me being like in clubs and stuff at 15 years old, like lugging drums around.
Your grandfather composed The Godfather, right?
Parts of it, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Clubs now.
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now?
Yeah.
Few small movies.
Yeah, just but my mom tried to keep us as far away from the business as possible. I mean, granted, we did grow up in L.A., but she, you know, like, we never went on sets. I mean, I think I went maybe 2 times in my life to a set, and she just wasn't, you know, she loves movies and plays and music and art, but she doesn't like, the more negative parts of it. And so she made a real concerted effort to try to live a life as separate from that as possible. So really, music and acting and stuff, it's all something that I kind of got into on my own. But I will say the one thing I saw growing up as a kid was, like, my mom loved movies and music so much. Like, I'd come home from school and you'd walk into the house and she'd be in front of the television, you know, watching The Red Shoes or something. You know, she loves she loves that movie. I think she's seen it more times than...
Ooh, that one. Well, that's not my favorite,
she's seen that thing.
A classic.
But I mean, I think at an early age, I did recognize that music and movies and stuff can be more than just like entertainment. Like, it can be actually, it can nourish you in some way. Like, because I didn't have any other friends with parents that would like watch a movie 100 times.
So at what point did you decide that you were not just going to sit in clubs and bang the drums, but act?
Well, I was 17 years old, and I was making my first album with my band, Phantom Planet, and I was at a party in San Francisco that was a celebration of a piece of music that my grandfather wrote for the movie Napoleon. Anyway, there was a woman there named Davia Nelson who, amongst other things, is a casting director, a local casting director in San Francisco. Rushmore was casting, and they had a casting director in L.A., New York. They had them in many different cities, you know, sending in videos of kids auditioning. And Davia somehow knew my family or my cousin, so somehow knew her because they struck up a conversation, and Sophia said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Oh, I'm casting this film, and we're really struggling to find the lead for it." And my cousin said, "What's it about?" And then she said, "It's a movie about an eccentric teenager who writes plays and falls in love with an older woman." And then she said, "Oh, it sounds like my cousin Jason." and he's right over there. It was like literally, that was, what a crazy thing to have happen. This woman comes up, we strike up a conversation, and she says, "You really look like you could be in this movie. And I said, well, I'm not an actor. I've never acted before. It's not what I'm a musician. In fact, I'm a drummer. And, well, she said, you know, I'm going to send you this script. You should audition. So I just did it because I had nothing to lose and it would be a fun experience. And I went in and I ended up getting a callback. And then another callback. I got 3 callbacks. And then I ended up getting cast in the film.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is going to happen.
Yeah, it was frightening. Kept going in against these professional actors, you know, like real actors with headshots and stuff. And that's how it sort of all began.
And so you two, I know Woody, your wife is Jason's agent. Is that how you met?
That's how we met, yeah.
And you've been friends for 15 years.
At least,
yeah.
I think.
I was 18. Woody was older than that and when we met. And I was, you know, Woody's an incredible musician. And
Jason's incredibly nice.
I think, like, you know, as a young person, like, I had played in a band for a while and been around musicians, but Woody seemed to me like to be on a different kind of level. So I spent a lot of time just hanging out, just watching him. And then, you know, inevitably, I think if you have two musicians that spend time together, they start playing music, and if you're enthusiastic about stuff, you know, you start recording and, you know, just one thing leads to the next. And we just have been kind of collaborating off and on for those, you know, 15 years or however, whatever the math was.
So, Jason, if you have to, I don't know, where does acting versus composing rate for you on the emotional, like if you can design your life?
If I could design my life, like just like, you know, like on a day planner?
like a pie chart. We're going to say it's a pie chart.
Well, I don't really break it up that way. I act and want to be involved in film and television. But to me, the thing about music, the beauty about music is that you can do it all the time. And it relaxes my brain. It's kind of like a puzzle that just makes me feel happy. So I think that music is sort of like, you know, you hear people like go to the gym at night to like unwind after a day. That's what I do with music. So it's just sort of part of my day. It's not like in competition with acting. Yeah, it supports it.
Your band, Jason, wrote the theme song for The OC, and you co-wrote the song for the HBO series Bored to Death.
Yes. I love theme songs and jingles. I always have, ever since I've been little. I just like the idea that someone could write something that plays for 10 seconds and is
stuck
totally
in your head
catchy.
On a
craft level. I like when I'm very confined. That's when I feel the most creative.
Well, you stay up so late, too. So
I do stay up late.
We did the goats. Yeah. You're like, well, I was up till 5, and I came up with 7 different ideas. And like, I was like, well, I went to bed at 10.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I
go to bed, and then I get up like later, and I listen back, and I go, that's why I stayed up late? That's terrible.
Jason Schwartzman is an actor, singer, songwriter, and composer. Woody Jackson is a musician, composer. They collaborated on the score for the new movie Goats. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
thank
you so much.
Thank you.
It was a real blast.
It was fun.
Oh, it was
goodness.
Fun. I liked a lot of your questions.
Good.
Almost all of them, in fact.
Oh.
Actually, I liked all of them.
Oh, good.
They were great. Good job.
Goats is available on VOD and comes out on DVD this week. Coming up after a short break, Keanu Reeves takes on a very different role. To comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Head over to the KCRW store to shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and more, all in support of KCRW. They won't last long. Check it out now at kcrw.com/store.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Keanu Reeves has been busy. He's starring in the huge and troubled samurai picture, 47 Ronin, which was supposed to come out in November, but now has been pushed twice and is set for late next year. He's just wrapped filming on Man of Tai Chi, his first effort as a director, and he produced the new documentary Side by Side. In that film, we see Reeves, best known from the Bill and Ted movies or perhaps the Matrix trilogy, interviewing just about every A-list Hollywood filmmaker. James Cameron, Chris Nolan, David Fincher, Martin Scorsese, and more. The topic, what's been lost and what's been found as the movie business turns from film to digital.
Are you done with film?
Don't hold me to it, Keanu, but I think I am.
Digital cameras are the new aesthetic that's coming to cinema, and at the same time, we're going to mourn the loss of film.
I am constantly asked to justify why I want to shoot a film on film, but I don't hear anybody being asked to justify why they want to shoot a film digitally.
I wanted whatever I could imagine to be something that we could realize. I saw the door opening on a field of possibilities that you just couldn't do with film.
In Side by Side, Cameron, Scorsese, Fincher, Danny Boyle, and the Wachowski siblings champion digital cameras, while Nolan insists on the virtues of film. Keanu Reeves became interested in this subject when he sat in on editing sessions for Henry's Crime, a film he helped develop, and saw how much digital technology was changing the business. He and filmmaker Christopher Keneally decided to make a documentary exploring the transformation.
We worked on it for about a year and a half, and, you know, we started to kind of get known. You know, oh, we heard about you. Oh, yeah, so-and-so spoke with you. And that was kind of cool to get that kind of feedback, you know, just that people were responding to this quest, you know.
Was there a particularly tough get?
I don't know about hardest get. I mean, I don't know. I wrote Christopher Nolan a letter on a typewriter.
On a typewriter?
Though. Yeah.
Because you figured that would...
Yeah, some of the intent, somehow to me that was like, we are talking about something digital and a transition, and I know that you work in film, sir, and, you know, and just something haptic, you know, not an email, just a personal letter typewritten.
And where did you find a typewriter?
I have a typewriter. But so I used my typewriter.
Right.
So that was, smart. You know, something. And actually, he was really generous with his time. I mean, he met with us during a lunch break while he was filming. So
one of the things that I learned, well, I hadn't thought about, being more, you know, the show's called The Business, and I write about that mostly, is this notion of, you know, with a camera, you stop every 10 minutes because you've got to reload. And I've just witnessed, because I was recently on the set of The Hobbit, you know, Peter mm-hmm. Jackson is not reloading. He's just like, right. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. Let's do it again. And the debate is the break a good thing or is it disruptive? And I think you thought in some ways the break was a good thing.
Yeah. It's,
as an actor, I mean.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah. I mean, it creates a kind of focus and attention. It can. And there's something material about it. It's finite, you know. If I get philosophical about it and romanticize it, in this moment of revealing life, there's death present.
The 10 minutes.
Yeah, that it's rolling there, and that's something...
You know you're on borrowed time.
Yeah, and that in this moment of when, after they say action, and we're going to play and recreate and try and, you know, live these characters and tell these stories, there's something just... You know that there's this pressure to it, that there's this concentration, that there's this moment.
Right.
And it will exist on film in a material way. And digitally, you can have an hour and a half. You can have 3 hours. You can, and that environment changes. It's a quantum question, right? I mean, would your performance have been different if, but, and you can't know. But, you know, in the documentary, I was interested in talking about what are we losing and what are we gaining. And to me, I think we're losing that moment. And to me, you know, and again, it might be romanticized and nostalgic, but I really found that special, walking onto a film set and, you know, action, and it's there and it's real.
I mean, you do have, you're very open to the people who are big fans of this. I think there's a moment where Steven Soderbergh says he found digital and he felt he had to call up film and say he'd met someone.
Yeah, it's great.
And then you have Chris Nolan talking about how married he is to film. And he has the power to be married to film. He's got that kind of clout.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know. Did you find yourself going back and forth or are you just a film guy?
I would say starting the project, I was the photochemical and Chris Keneally was the digital. For us, we would be side by side like that. And you know, I would say, well, look what we're losing. And he's like, well, look what we're gaining.
Right.
You know, and through the course of the film, really the digital, the, you know, it's let so many people dream in a different way and create in a different way.
Did you stay where you started or did you evolve? And
I have evolved, but my feeling for film has not changed. You know, the idea of watching project a beautiful print on a big screen and to work in film is magic. It's wonderful. It's extraordinary. And
so you just directed Man of Tai Chi.
I just completed principal photography. Yeah.
And I assume you did that on film?
Digital.
Aha. Digital. And is that is because?
In the end, it was because I really liked the look of it. You know, I ended up shooting on the Arri studio camera, full chip, and I used these Hawk anamorphic lenses. And that mix was just, to me, modern and crisp and yummy. And
you know, I feel like I've been missing something because, and this is not meant to be, don't take it the wrong way, but for years I've sort of thought Keanu Reeves is an actor for hire.
Uh-huh.
And now you're making a documentary, you're directing a movie. What the heck is going on?
Well, what's an actor for hire?
You know, a guy who acts. I mean, but doesn't necessarily right. wear... I mean, we know George Clooney is always... He's directing, he's noodling around.
Right.
An actor is an actor, you know?
Right.
And there's a lot of people. They may get a producer title, but they're basically actors.
Oh, I understand now. I would say over the past couple of years, I've been trying to do some other things. You know, it was... Yeah, in terms of developing material, Henry's Crime, this film that I was involved in. Yeah, I was just trying to do some other stuff, you know, trying to make things.
You think it's just a question of where you are in your life? Where the movie business is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of those are, at least personally, in the equation.
Well, what about Bill and Ted? Are you going to do that?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there's a script that's really good and... So hopefully we'll see if anybody wants to make it.
So in terms of Bill and Ted, is there part of you that thinks like this would be fun or is there part of you that thinks like, oh God, I have to be that guy again?
Yeah, both of those. I think, you know, I really love the character. I love the characters. I think Chris and Ed, the writers, have come up with a really great script. Obviously, you know, Alex is a friend of mine and, you know, and so it would be great to do that. I don't know what it would be like. You know, I'd probably have to do like a table read, you know, but the story takes into account kind of our age. And
but you're such a different, it feels like you're such a different guy now. You're directing, you're making a documentary about serious issues in the film business.
Yeah, well, Ted was always, you know, he's, you know, I learned a lot from him and to embody his spirit was really cool.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Keanu Reeves is the narrator and a producer on the new documentary Side by Side. The movie is now available on demand. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.